All right, and I'm going to hand it back to Tammy, who is going to provide a little bit more on how the Q&A session will work. We're going to give an opportunity for your questions about ridership forecasting and modeling, and be able to provide some answers to you guys to go into that detail. Back to you, Tammy.
Thanks, Riley. Next slide. We now welcome questions related to tonight's topics. We're only taking questions in the from the Q&A box. So to ask a question, please press the Q&A button in the Zoom taskbar and then type in your question. For those attending in person at RTC's conference room, please write your questions on the piece of paper provided and hand them to an RTC staff in the room, and they will submit your questions in the Q&A box. We will try our best to get through all of the questions, but if we're unable to answer anything tonight, we will follow up in writing post-meeting. All right, it looks like we already have a few questions in the Q&A box. So the first one says, "DRM is the best option. DRM is the best for Santa Cruz County and would hope that this is the model used. DRM would take into account that Santa Cruz County is a tourist town. Also, DRM is more accurate because the proposed rail system trains would not go beyond Santa Cruz County. Can you comment on your plans, and if it's hybrid, can you justify how the train would support a broader region, especially when a bus can accommodate the broader region better?"
All right. Thank you, Tammy. So it looks like this question was maybe posted in the chat a little bit as we were providing some of the context for today in the information session. It is true that the direct ridership model is different than the local model.
Regional.
There you go.
Yeah.
Taking both of those, both of those models, combining them together provides a lot more advantages. Matt, I thought maybe one of the things that we can go into in answering this question is, are there drawbacks to the hybrid approach that maybe you can explain on? And then also just explain how we will look at will we look at transit in meaning bus and train use in that model?
Yeah, it's a great question. And yeah, I can maybe kind of touch on that, because I think, Riley, you did kind of hit on some of the key points in that. Yeah, the hybrid approach of using some of the county model to look at kind of regional travel patterns, both longer distance trips within Santa Cruz County, but also beyond Santa Cruz County, allows us to think about, yeah, kind of how would a new transit mode or a new transit option in the county affect existing trips? And so that does give us that type of information that's useful. So using that regional model is helpful in understanding those broader travel patterns. What it doesn't get us is really looking or it wasn't what it doesn't give us is really looking at the station-specific context. So kind of the first and last mile of trips that might happen, how many people are walking to a station to catch the train somewhere else, how many people might be biking, kind of where might they be going? Are they going to the beach or the boardwalk? Are they going, somewhere else in the county? Some of the direct ridership model has the advantage of being really focused on station area characteristics. So this hybrid approach is one that we at Verran Pierce have employed on a number of other transit expansion projects or new transit investment projects elsewhere in Northern California and beyond. And we found that it works quite well. It allows you to kind of have the best of both worlds. There are some things to be aware of. And so kind of to that point that you made, Riley, about some drawbacks, you do have sort of two different tools. And so how you combine the results of two different tools in a process like this is always a question of maybe kind of the regional model gives us one kind of piece of information about levels of ridership at different stations. And sometimes that doesn't quite align with how a direct ridership model might give us results for how many people might be getting on or getting off the train at certain stations. So you do have to go through kind of a post-processing effort to align some of those differences. And that's normal. And that as you're thinking about kind of using tools, we want to make sure that we're applying our professional judgment to think about reconciling any differences that the two models might give us, and understanding how we can use them for their strengths, but also we do want to be aware of kind of where there are any challenges or things that we'll need to address along the way.
Thanks, Matt. And it looks like we're getting a flood of questions in the Q&A now. And keep adding your questions to the Q&A. We'll take as many as we can, but as we did mention before, if we don't get to your specific questions, we will be preparing a FAQ and some responses after that we will post to our website and link to is on our Zebert website as well. But Tammy, what's the next one in our queue?
Okay, the next one is SCC has significantly lower population and job densities than your other examples. Agreed. This means that the first and last mile links will be very important. How will these issues be dealt with?
Great, thank you. Matt, I'll hand that one back to you again.
Sure. I think the density of overall population and employment is something that we want, that models already consider, but we want to make sure that we're particularly kind of aware of that here. As Hsien Kang was mentioning, and showing the example map of the Caltrain system and both you know, that process looked at existing and future population and employment density. It is an important input into the model, and density does affect how we get ridership results. So we do want to be aware of that. And I think the point of thinking about first and last mile connections is also a good one. That information would be one of the ways that the direct ridership model would consider how localized population and employment density, both existing and potential future future change, would be reflected in the ridership results. So that's one of the benefits of the direct ridership tools. It allows us to be a little bit more fine-grained on those types of questions.
Great, thank you, Matt. All right, the next one, it says, I noticed that forecasts often show a range of possible results. Will the concept report come with policy recommendations to maximize potential ridership numbers, or will it focus more on the simple fact of what the numbers are?
All right, thank you. And Matt, I'm going to lean on you again for that one.
No, happy to take that. A lot of great questions here on sort of the ridership process and how it's going to be used. I would note maybe on that one is that, and as with many ridership forecasting efforts, we want to make sure the ridership results are a useful tool, both kind of in and of themselves to understand what ridership levels we'd have, but also that there's some sort of a feedback loop as we're thinking about kind of the project definition and some of the questions about how different service levels or station locations or other features of the project might be affected or might affect ridership, but then also kind of how we might be able to think about using ridership as a performance metric that then maybe allows us to go back and kind of tweak some of the aspects of the project in a way that maybe would maximize ridership or kind of give us some additional benefit. So it's both the ridership process as we envision it is useful as a tool for planning, but then also does give us ridership results at the end of the day. So hopefully that helps answer the question of, yeah, we do want to use that feedback loop throughout the process with the rest of the team as we're going through this.
Thank you. How much work can you do on ridership projection or modeling without knowing what a ride costs? And that, of course, depends on other work still being done.
Great. Thank you, Tammy. And this one's coming from Commissioner Rotkin. Thanks for joining us today. I think, Matt, let's have you answer this one again.
Yeah, and that's a really important question just about there are assumptions that we'll need to make about how the project would look and kind of what the results might be as a result of those assumptions. So the cost of the service is one of those. Models, travel demand models, both regional models and direct ridership models, don't necessarily get into a lot of the detailed elements of a fare structure and kind of exactly kind of how you might have discounts or kind of monthly passes, things like that. They do make some maybe sort of generalized assumptions, but it is one of those ways that we can have an input into the model. And there's other assumptions that we need to make along the way too. So fares are important. Service patterns are important. Things like even the cost of parking at stations, if there's free parking, if it has a cost, and how much parking, those are kind of capacity constraints that we also think about. So there's a number of variables that can be fed into the model, and we'd want to make some assumptions through this process. And we can't be perfect about every assumption, but do the best we can with the information we know, so we hopefully get the most beneficial results we can.
Great. Thank you, Matt. And I do see in the chat that someone was very detailed and noticed that we had an error in some of the dates. We mentioned December 7th for the commission public hearing, and that was incorrect. The actual date is December 5th, Thursday, at our regularly scheduled RTC meeting. So we apologize that, and we'll make sure that we correct that on any other communications. Tammy, what's the next in our queue?
Are you including shifts in travel modes in the southern part of Santa Cruz County once the Pajaro station begins operations?
All right, Matt, back to
I can. Yeah, these are all great questions. It speaks to the question of how you connect to other systems and kind of what is the nature of the connection at Pajaro. And kind of how might that influence ridership? That's one of those assumptions that we'll need to make to understand kind of, yeah, we have to assume something when we do our ridership results. And to the extent it's sort of some level of connection at Pajaro and kind of what that would mean for ridership on the system versus maybe not a connection now, but a future connection. Those will be things that we'll need to think about, but we have already been discussing some of that as a team, and we'll need to kind of be aware of that as we go forward. And in some scenarios, I think even in past efforts that have already been looked at on the corridor, you do have some scenarios that don't have a connection at Pajaro and some that do. And so to the extent that some of those prior efforts can be informative here, we'll be going back to look at those and maybe updating some of those prior results.
Thank you, Matt. When will we see the ridership forecast model be complete? And when will we see predicted ridership?
Okay, I'm going to have Mark McLaren, the project manager for the HDR consulting team. We'll kick this one over to you.
Thanks, Riley. We're in the process, as you may know now, of refining the alignments and things like station locations, other things that you're going to have an opportunity to review and provide input in as a part of this Milestone 3 outreach activity that goes into December. During that time frame, we'll be fine-tuning the model because it's an iterative process as we get information, as we go back and forth, we see results. Some of those results may not make sense the first time around. We're going to go back and test those and make sure that we understand as we come forward with numbers that they were most indicative of what we believe the model is capable of telling us about the ridership in this corridor. So the outputs of those numbers and how they reflect to that alternative for recommendation for the project is something that we will talk about in the first quarter of 2025.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay, are you using cell phone data like Streetlight to understand the origins and destinations currently made by car, bike, and pedestrian?
Okay, and I think we have a similar one on Streetlight that I mentioned saw earlier. We can probably get that one to combine with this one. That one, I think, is will the ridership forecast include a comparison with streetlight data and model forecasts from the TCAA. So Matt, I'll kick that one over to you and how we're going to use a certain type of data such as streetlight or some of the forecasts that we had in the TCAA going into this effort.
Yeah, good question. I think at least one of them already acknowledged that there were some additional data sources that were evaluated in prior efforts like the TCAA. So streetlight data is a type of what's called big data. It allows us to understand kind of actual travel patterns that are occurring, specifically where people are starting trips and where they're ending trips. And so it allows us to get pretty useful information on broader regional travel patterns. That was used as part of the TCAA transit ridership forecasting process. And a lot of that was kind of pre-COVID level trips. So useful. It's something, streetlight data or another type of big data source is something that we're considering and thinking about here. And streetlight data, we use it a lot for a lot of different projects. It's useful, very useful in some contexts, maybe less useful in other contexts. It's one of the things that we're thinking about potentially if and how we use it as we move forward. There's other tools that are out there too that give us similar information. And so there might be some opportunities to look at kind of other information on existing travel patterns. So it's a useful tool, but a lot of those tools just focus on existing travel. They don't look into the future. So we want to also be thinking about how things will change in the future and combine that with a better understanding of existing travel patterns.
Okay. Watershed forecasts include potential activity for Monterey County's Salinas to Gilroy extension and passenger station at Pajaro, where our rail line joins the state network?
That's a great question. Matt, do you want to take this one or have it Mark answer that one?
I think I can maybe take a quick stab, and Mark, feel free to jump in. I note that kind of travel outside of the region is something that, yeah, we're thinking about, and we would use information from other sources that maybe aren't directly modeled in Santa Cruz County. We do have a regional travel model for the AMBAG region that looks at trips in Monterey and San Benito counties, and we have information from that we can look at. But Mark, anything else to add there?
Sure, Matt. But one thing I would add, and I think Ken made reference to this in the conversation when she was talking about the dates or the points in time that we model, is that we can look at shorter term or longer term horizons to understand other elements of the transportation network that would be in place and operational at those various points in time. So if we look at a project today with Zeppert and we say, okay, if we moved ahead on a timeline to implement this project and a few years down the road, the train's operating, Pajaro Station may not be connecting to the rest of the state rail system at the same way at that point in time. So the model gives us the ability to look at both what the ridership would look like if the line just went from Santa Cruz to Watsonville without that connection, and then also to show us what ridership might be looking like if it connected to or then interlined to go to another community to transfer to other routes.
Thank you, Mark. We're running up close to 7 o'clock, so we'll try to answer a couple more. Ridership also depends on how horrible driving Highway 1 or so-called is. We have some projections on what that will look like in, say, 10 years, but we don't really know how bad it will be. So how will you address that in ridership projections? Also, can we assume that biking and busing to the stations will be arranged so people say from Cabrillo won't have to walk too far to consider taking the train either north or south from the community college? That's from Mike Rockin, Commissioner.
Great. Those are great questions. And I think we'll have Matt and Mark tag team on this. Matt, you want to take the first part of it and then Mark follow up?
I'll maybe hand this over to Hyun-Kyun, because I think she can note a little bit on sort of how we think about the travel times between different modes and how we compare and contrast one of those.
Yeah, thank you, Matt. That's a great question. And one of the things about in the ridership model and the regional demand model that what happens is the model is able to achieve an equilibrium between different modes and what makes sense for people and which modes it makes sense for each type of trip purposes for people to use. So it's actually able to look at the capacity of the road, and if the vehicle volumes on specific road is projected to go over the capacity, then it is able to translate that into a different modes that might be available alternative to vehicle or alternative to different routes. So it will be able to take into congestion into the consideration to a certain level. And also about the questions on the connections, the first and last mile connection at the end of the rail near Cabrillo, that's part of the future changes of the transportation network that might be possible later down the road. Once the rail project becomes more active, there may be changes to the transit services that are currently offered to better accommodate for the new rail line that's coming in the community.
Great. And Mark, do you want to, we've been talking a lot about this in the team about those connections, particularly at Cabrillo and UCSC. Do you want to share one or two words on that?
Yeah, sure, Riley, because that's a really good question. And as a part of this process, and you'll also see when the material goes live for a review and input, one of the topics is several of the station locations of is there a one location that is more convenient, that's more accessible, that makes more sense given the place where somebody may be beginning a trip or ending a trip, like Cabrillo College? And is there a savings in terms of travel time that's realized whereby it would make more sense for the station to be in one location versus another? And that's one of those topics that's there for conversation. As a model, I think is best summarized, it's a tool that tries to predict what human behavior is going to be. And it takes data from a lot of sources. It's not only the land use that exists today, but what's forecasted in the future. It's what travel looks like in terms of congestion on Highway 1 and other routes, and the time it takes you to travel, say, from Watsonville to Santa Cruz on Highway 1 or taking other roadways. And based on the services that are available, the connectivity, the ability that you have to get to a station, whether you ride your bike, whether you take a bus, whether you drive, those things all get calculated in such a way that it's trying to determine or ascertain what choice you would make if you had better options than the options that are there today. And so that's why it's an iterative process, and your input in those conversations is important too, because we want to hear what you think of some of those station locations, how you would get to a station. And those are considerations that will all be a part of the discussion, right?
Great. Thanks, Mark. And I know we're over time. We're going to take one last question from the community, but I do want to reassure everybody that we are capturing all the questions that have been asked, and our project team will be providing answers to those and via a FAQ that we will post to our website. So we'll make sure we get those out to the community in short due course. Tammy, what's our last one?
Okay. Can you address how future plans will be incorporated in the model, such as the downtown Watsonville specific plan?
Great. Good question. So Matt, kick that one again to you.
Yeah, great question. I think this speaks to kind of not just kind of certain cities, but also kind of just broader growth within Santa Cruz County and beyond. But the short answer is yes, that we would look and a model typically looks at future land use changes that are expected to occur. That incorporates kind of local community plans and kind of other plans that might be reasonably foreseeable. And that is part of the model process to look at land use change and increases in population and employment that might occur. And that's part of the model process. The other part of the model process is thinking about transportation system changes too. And so if streets are going to change in communities, if there's new transportation projects or new street connections or roadway connections or other transportation improvements, say kind of for surface transit system or trail connections, there we capture as much as possible about kind of what we can about those transportation system changes, and that's accounted for in the model as well. So hopefully that answers the question of sort of, you want to make kind of an informed assumption about both transportation system changes and land use growth, and then capture that in your future ridership forecasts.
Thank you, Matt. Next slide. Next slide, please. As a reminder, to stay up to date, you can join our mailing list, visit the project website, or message the project email with any questions you have. Next slide. Again, thank you all for joining us tonight. We appreciate your participation. Thanks, everyone, and have a great evening.